I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is cutting.
Hello and welcome to Fever FM. Tonight I am joined by Dale, Lena and Cam. How are we all, people?
Box of fluffies, buddy.
Pretty good.
I'm also good.
You're happy you got your new hat, Cam.
This thing is outstanding. Oh, I love it. Yeah, my wife called it my ugly hat and I'm like, I'm actually okay with it. I think it looks fantastic, so.
It has definite vibes of recycling a good woolly blanket.
Yep, fair. And I bought another pair of those bright yellow shoes too, so happy days.
Well, it'll make it easy for the paramedics to find you, mate. That's the important thing.
That's what I figure. Yeah, when I keel over from that inevitable heart attack in the next couple of years, yeah, it'd be good.
I was assuming that the shoes are from Temu, so they're probably made of asbestos or something. So
shoes are from Temu. They're great. Nothing bad to say about Temu. I'm sure there are bad things to say, but I don't have any.
Other shoes are available at other retailers.
Other options are available.
You mean retracted on legal advice? Cam, like those kind of things.
Hey, man, if you've done your research and are prepared to have that conversation on a football podcast, let's do it.
I was told they're
retracted on legal advice.
Jesus Christ. Wow, that's getting cut.
Allegedly.
Please don't defame a massive company.
It's not a good start.
I was told that. I'm not saying that they are.
I feel the lawsuit in my bones anyway.
Yeah. So if
only we knew a judge.
Are they Wish like rebranded? Because like Wish has seemed to just like vanish off the face of the earth.
No, I'm convinced he was basically
retracted on legal advice.
How am I defaming them after that?
Oh, dude, this is all getting cut.
I gave a basis for my opinion that's readily identifiable from publicly available information, so that's not defamation.
You're going to get charged for that advice,
yeah,
Frosty?
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Lawyered.
I bill in 6 minutes. So.
I'd like to see you fill your timesheet in. Let's move on to the victory game for the women. An away game, so this, I've got to say, it doesn't bode well. They just haven't been up to a tremendous amount. And it didn't start well. H, I'm going to throw to you, because how do you describe this? You've already corrected me on being too negative on Temu. How do I not be negative about this start?
No, it was pretty bad. It was extremely bad. I was very close to turning it off, to be honest. I know a lot of people did. The men's game starting an hour in was probably a bit of a mercy. Yeah, I just thought it wasn't good enough. And I think I've said on this pod before that my concern wasn't so much the making of mistakes, it's the making of repeated mistakes that don't seem to get corrected. And I felt like, you know, when the floodgates opened for victory, it was a lot of just the same defensive lapses over and over again.
Yep. I feel you on that. It's I was looking for it to be, oh, they're missing Longo, they're missing Kate Taylor. And it wasn't that. They weren't streaming through the middle of us. They were going around the sides and then just whacking it in the middle. The two corners, just, oh, those are the ones that hurt for mine. The first header, who was it that scored that? Goad. She's good. She's a good player. But, man.
Stanford product?
I'm sure she's got a great education and, you know.
She does like neuroscience, like she actually is a genius, but anyway, continue.
Holy shit.
It does feel like we're deflecting from the topic at hand, though, here, guys.
There's a reason for that.
And fair enough. I mean, I haven't seen it. I was working while the game was on, so I can't really comment, but it does feel like some massive amounts of deflection.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of that. The deflections will come later, by the way. The set piece was poor. The calling, the headed goal where it was a 1-on-3, she's dipped in behind Mackenzie Barry and got a free head. Mackenzie Barry didn't even know she was there. Mackenzie Barry's turning around to, who was it on the outside, Davidson, and going, why didn't you tell me? And those fundamental, you know, communication errors, especially for someone like Davidson and Barry, who've been playing together all season, that's what really stings.
Like, it just looks like a preseason, just things not clicking. And I do think that possibly the squad is a little imbalanced in terms of defensive strength. I think Kate Teller was a massive loss for them. Like, I think you just, so easy to underestimate how much work she's doing and how crucial she is. But her ability to disrupt in particular is just so key for that team.
Yeah.
I think that hurt them. But yeah, it was just frustrating. I mean, we shouldn't take away from the fact that Victory is a very good team. And they had been bolstered by the return of, you know, quite a few of their first choice players, and any team that's got Alex Chidiak in it is not to be trifled with. But I think for me, it was just the repeated errors and some of the basic things not being done that was frustrating.
And quite a few of those, well, I mean, those first three goals, like, quite almost uncharacteristic. I don't think we've conceded many from corners or sort of head. We've been pretty solid, relatively. I'm sure there's probably one or two in there, but yeah, all three kind of coming, yeah, down that same side eerily, and us just not dealing with it.
Victory have scored a lot of set piece goals though, and the deliveries were very good. They just, but I'm not really sure what Riley Foster was doing in both of them. She kind of came, but she was coming outside her near post and didn't get anywhere near it.
Yeah, I thought she was unconvincing.
I think that's, yeah.
Especially on the goals.
She seems to be a phenomenal goalkeeper, great hands, when she can just dive to it. But she doesn't seem to like, I'll let you comment, Dale, on her technical ability, but it doesn't seem like her movement pre-diving is particularly good. It looks like she's anchored and then dives. And if she gets that dive in the right place, grand, but just can't cover ground.
I don't know. I mean, the two corners, statistics will show, you know, whipped to the near post is the most dangerous type of corner you can have. Yeah, and they did chuck a lot of players in there, so it was clearly a plan from them. And as a goalkeeper, you know, you tend to stand from corners towards the back post because it's easy to go forward, so you're always a little bit out of, you know, you have to cover a lot of ground. She perhaps thought she'd get there but didn't. But I'm not entirely sure that it would have mattered that much, like just where the ball lands, you know, it still lands in a dangerous spot. You know, no one really picking up at the back post themselves. Like, it's just a tap bundled home without any kind of scramble or anyone trying to, you know, leap on the line to block or anything like that. Just kind of obviously missing the first one. The first ball is not ideal, but there's nothing on the reaction afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of, like you say, it was like a, felt like a preseason game. They've played, yeah, they've played what, one game in 4 weeks, as a, you know, like they're a week away, 2 weeks away, half the Ferns away, then the break, and then coming back. I wonder if that's kind of an element of it. I mean, I only seen bits and pieces, but did it feel like this, obviously the second half was, well, the scoreline was a lot better. Did it feel like Victory had taken their foot off, or had we found a bit more of a foot in the door?
Yeah, maybe. But it was also weird, you know, you kind of had that, they score a goal, and then immediately off the kickoff there's a pretty bad mistake from Victory. Like, that was 2 and 3. So to an extent it might flash the Phoenix a little bit, the 5-3. Although, I mean, obviously there's pretty, it's good mentality required, I think, to still come out and attack enough to score 3 goals, even if one is an own goal.
Yeah, I thought there was definitely a bit of, oh, we're up by 5 by Victory, but they looked, I mean, you can only play the team that's in front of you, right? And they did hustle and try and get more goals. I mean, certainly when Speckmeyer scored the third, she was literally yelling at whoever was in front of her, get the ball, get it back. You know, they weren't giving it up, but it did feel a little late. The connections through midfield, I thought, were a bit of a problem too. We've seen obviously Fraser in there and Wynnum. They just haven't formed a bit of a combo yet. Wynnum seems to she keeps it all glued to her foot, but she doesn't seem to be able to find anyone in any kind of speed, and just slows that attack down. She doesn't give the ball away, but she runs around in circles a lot. And by that stage, Victory had got back. And I just don't know whether it's a connection between her and Fraser, or it's just, as you say, if they just felt off.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just hard to say at this point, because they're clearly a well-coached team. Winnem's clearly very talented, but it just felt disjointed. And I think Dale's right to point out how much time they'd had away. That's going, you know, that's the first thing you'll see, is those passes taking longer to connect. I think that's the earliest manifestation of a team that just needs to kind of come back together.
Yeah. On the positive notes, Mickey Robertson scored her first goal. A well-taken goal, I should add. Really clocked it into the roof of the net. If we can call it a positive, one of the Victory goals was frightfully unlucky for Riley Foster, who has come off the crossbar while she's diving back to tip it over and gone straight to the back of her head and gone in. I honestly thought she was going to be in tears by the end of that. It was just so unlucky. So, I mean, if you're looking for positives, one of their goals was a bit on the jammy side, and Mickey Robertson scored, and it was a good goal. Felt like Speckmeyer. Just, we needed her back playing 90 minutes to really kind of rev that attack up. Cox didn't seem quite as effective without Speckmeyer, but I'm hoping that, you know, they get them all back on the field and just can kind of kick on a bit. And maybe a couple of home games wouldn't hurt them now.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter point out, you know, that, for example, Western United, the schedule really has been hard on the Knicks, because, for example, Western United, the spree they've been on, even their away games have, like, also been in Melbourne, kind of aside from Unite round. So the travel that the Phoenix are having to do, like, really shouldn't be underestimated in terms of the impact that that's going to be having. It's just so hard,
I mean,
to travel that much. And also, I think, to me as well, like, those three shocks of Wiz, Marissa Vandermeer, and Chloe Knott, I think that was a kind of a negative turning point in the season in some ways.
Yeah, that's valid. I mean, we've only got to look at the men's team and how long it's taken them to actually figure out how to play away, how to get consistent results, you know, best part of 20 years, right?
The other point I'd say is, and I think I mentioned it maybe 6 or so weeks ago, is just the amount of turnover we've had from week to week. We've played 17 games and we've had 23 players start in those 17 games.
Oof.
And we've had 16 different starting 11s.
So,
and we average about three changes per week. I think... And some of that, a lot of that is, you know, in injuries and ferns and stuff like that. But that just seems abnormally high. That's more than just tinkering. If you can kind of compare that to the men, and then obviously the last 6 weeks have been quite different because of injuries and stuff. But the start of the season, you could probably name the 11 with your eyes closed, maybe one or two here or there. But I'm not convinced, or I don't think I know what the best 11 is. And I know there's some horses for courses and stuff like that, but I don't know if Paul feels the same way, but I'm not sure he quite knows what the best 11 is.
It feels like it's very much a match-to-match prospect. I mean, there have been so many, like, the people I would have gone with nailed-on starters, all of them have picked up injuries at various stages, all of them. Maybe not Mackenzie Barry. She's had Ferns duty, but pretty much everyone I would call a nailed-on starter has had an injury. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's either amazingly unlucky, or, you know, they really need to kind of figure out their strength and conditioning regime. I don't know how much of it is that, because, you know, with the Ferns stuff going on twice this season, it's kind of, it does raise questions of how you manage a professional team with that many interruptions and that many injuries. And like, I don't know how you do it. And I'm normally good with opinions. I'll give them to anyone.
I think in general, you know, consistency is is quite helpful. Like, you don't want that to the point which you refuse to make changes. Combinations and those kind of things takes time, and when you don't have a long pre-season to work these things through, the amount of churn in players or in the starting 11 at least can't be conducive to, especially the type of football they want to try play. You know, it requires movement and understanding positions and runs and stuff like that. If you're playing, you know, like a counter-attacking, it might be quite different, but if they want to play the way they want to play, I think you probably need a little bit more consistency. Now, and as I say, some of that's enforced, but I think some of it isn't either. And I think that's just maybe because, yeah, maybe a couple of players haven't stepped up to what we think they would be, or some of the imports haven't been to the same, hopefully, you know, the same quality we thought they might be. And so there's a little bit of trying to plug some gaps or find some solutions. But I don't think you can overlook consistency in some of these things as well.
With their next game, it's against Perth Glory. So, I mean, effectively a winnable game, I think, especially if some of those players can come back. Do we know how far Flea and Taylor are away from coming back?
I haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah. It's very hard to speculate when no one gives you anything.
I think Perth is a very winnable game. You know, they've gone over there from Melbourne, so there's obviously a little bit of the travel factors, perhaps not so much. You know, we saw that help with the men not too long ago. Perth are in free fall themselves, and I think they've won in about 10 games or something. But counter that, you know, we're playing at midnight, which is, yeah, a little bit of a challenge as well. So there's definitely some a prospect. I think in reality, they probably need to win this game or at least not lose it, to have a chance to the top six. I think if they lose us, then I think that probably seals it. I think there's probably just too much gap to make up when you've got, despite having three home games.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
Yeah, 100%. They need to win this one. There's no argument that this 3 points puts them still within a touching distance. And that gives you an opportunity with three home games in such a short period of time. But they're all wins. Like, it's four wins from here to make the six. They have to win four of the remaining games to have a chance. So at least one of them has to be in Australia, and Perth's the best shout at the moment.
Just had a random thought. Why don't we play, every time Perth schedules us at midnight, why don't we schedule them at 10 a.m. over here? Just like, you know, they're still crawling out of bed in their PJs.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Haven't we got got that 1 o'clock kickoff for the men on Easter Sunday? You know, that's the sort of thing we could do every time either of our teams play Perth. It's brilliant.
Bugger that. 10 a.m. I want to see them trooping out still wearing their slippers.
Mate, there's some weird fetish shit going on there. You need to stop.
I'm pretty sure they'd be pretty shit in their slippers.
Mm-hmm.
Any advantage? Really, I don't know if there's a tremendous amount more we can say about this. It's just, it feels like they're just in that away slump and they just need something to turn around. I am hoping that having a bit more leadership from Flea coming back, obviously that leadership is substantial. Getting Kate Taylor back as well, I think really you get a lot more in that back quartet, that back six. It's just something that they just seem to need a bit of snap in the tackles and just someone yelling, get your head up. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we've all been on a run like this where you don't know where the next win's coming from and you don't know where your next goal's coming from. Certainly I never did. But yeah, it's tough to talk about without heaping on them. Let's rock on to the men then.
No, just say honestly, the last five games are going to play Perth, Sydney, Adelaide, Canberra, and Western Sydney. And Sydney is the only one of those games which you'd consider to be a tough match compared to how we've gone this season.
It's a tough match for anyone, right?
Sure. Adelaide and Canberra are below us. and Perth are on a slide, as we have been, as are Western Sydney. So those four games, none of those four teams are, other than Sydney, the other four teams, none of them are in the six. They're 7th, 8th, 11th and 12th. Those are infinitely winnable games. So you've had a pretty tough schedule. You've had a lot of away games, and you know the strength of schedule has been difficult. But this closing out, though, there is 12 points on offer there that we can take, without doubt. But we have to take it. So I'm not overly optimistic that we'll make the six, but it's certainly not a done and dusted thing if we can get out of that slump.
That's what we pay you for, Cam. Wildly optimistic.
How is that wildly optimistic? I just said I'm not optimistic we'll make the six.
Yeah, that's wildly optimistic for me, mate. Let's rock on to the men, because there's some things to discuss in that one too. So Adelaide at the Cape Tin, no real surprises for the most part. Paulson, Kelly Heald, Wooten, Sermon, Payne, Old starting again, Cryovan, Alte, Ball, Rufa and Salas getting his first start. Was Sawada even in there? Someone's noted that he was ruled out during the warm-up.
Well, he was listed in the starting in the squad. He's on the bench. I think Chi said at the post match that he felt something twinge the day before, woke up, said he felt it kind of okay, and then did the warm-up. Said nah. So another, he's kind of mentioned as precautionary. But geez, he is racking up the Pine minutes at the first day.
He has form for it. As you point out, last season was kind of the aberration. He has got a lot of injuries. Unfortunate consequence of being in a big unit sometimes. The opposite of the little and large combo, Costa Barbarousis not starting. That was a surprise to me. I thought, you know, if Sawada's not, you have to start.
Well, he was coming back off an injury though too, right? So there's going to be, and I felt, and I'll talk about this later as we talk about our subs, I felt there was a lot of managing of minutes as well within that selection for the team and who played off the bench and who started. So it certainly felt like that just because of the sheer number of injuries we've had in the last few weeks.
But in saying that, it felt very much like a 4-6-0. I mean, If you're managing Costa and obviously Zavada's out, you know, you do have strikers on there. Well, you do have forwards on there. You do have OBH. I know I've been critical of him, and we have as well, but he is a forward. It did certainly play out, especially at the beginning, that we weren't great in the front quarter, in the front third. Is that a polite way of putting it?
I think we got into some positions. We just didn't have anyone on the central channel to do anything. Mm-hmm. I think it was meant to be. I think Cryev mostly, but I think it's his natural kind of game to get into the back line. So it's kind of funny old game. Like, it just felt that first 20 minutes were kind of okay. We kind of looked pretty comfortable, and that kind of just fell apart a little bit until we brought on the subs.
Yeah, it's funny that we would think about using Cryev there, because to me he feels very much like if he's playing as a up top, he's playing as a false nine. He's always dropping back. He's kind of looking for those pockets in between. He's not a guy that runs off the shoulder. He's not a guy that makes a run, you know, those late runs into the 6-yard box. How did you guys feel about the intensity? To me, like, obviously sitting back in the stands, it felt like they were just a little off. Like they felt like they'd done their hard yards. So back home against a team that wasn't particularly firing, they just looked a little off the boil. Did you guys feel that, or is it just me?
I don't know if I was off the boil, but I don't think it was as controlled a performance, particularly in the first half, as we're used to seeing. I wouldn't say that was an intensity thing so much as it just didn't look possibly as controlled as it normally does. But I mean, they showed what they've shown time and time again, which is their ability to just put the foot down when it's needed, right?
There's a word you used, comfortable. It's a word that Dale has used a couple of times in anger. that didn't feel comfortable. It felt like it was a little bit, not here, not on the edge, but certainly just not quite 100% concentrated almost.
No, I think there were definitely large patches of that game where it didn't look comfortable whatsoever. Like I say, I think the first 20 minutes were kind of okay. And then, I don't know, we just gave a ball away, sloppy positions. You know, Sermon did a couple of times, but was fortunate enough to be able to get back and to sort of block. And it's kind of fun, like, after about 20 minutes, they started getting a foothold and it started looking like, you know, there's a little bit of pressure here. And then basically, Old goes and scores and kind of breaks the back of them a little bit. It just at the opportune time, like one of those sort of almost sliding door moments where they're starting to get on top and we've gone and scored. But then they kind of, I think they almost scored straight after, didn't they? And that kind of the middle 30 to 40 minutes, they felt they looked a lot better than us, created some pretty good chances. You know, we're probably conceding much bigger chances than we normally have done, and chances that probably should have been goals more often than not. So I think we're probably a little bit fortunate that they weren't capitalised and Adelaide were a bit rubbish as well.
Yeah, there were a few blocks. You mentioned the Sermon one where he turned the ball over and managed to get back and block the short cross in. I think there was a Salas one where he came sliding in like near the penalty spot, I think, to block off something. Man, that boy loves to be horizontal. There was one of the slides, I swear he went about 15 metres horizontally. Must have taken about 30 seconds before he actually came to a stop. I'm very concerned about, it feels like someone signed his contract and went, we're going to pay you regardless of whether you're sitting on, you know, sitting up in the stands the entire time. And he's gone, holiday, sweet.
Look, there's nothing wrong with a sliding tackle as long as you get your timing right. So if he's getting his timing right, there is no issue.
Yes, but he is coming from distance.
Yeah, but he got them all right.
No, he missed the ball and the player by about 3 meters in that really long one. The guy just stood still and saw him go sailing past.
Did he get the player? He didn't get the player, it's fine.
That said, man, he's electric. It looks like he hasn't quite figured out how he fits in. So he's just trying to make it up with pure effort and speed.
Yeah, Jimmy's probably gone like, do this. And he's like, yeah. And then just goes and does whatever he wants. It did feel a little bit about just the balance wasn't quite right in that first hour. That the midfield wasn't quite operating perfectly. And I'm not I'm not blaming him per se. I just think the balance between what we needed to do and what we had in there, I just didn't think was didn't feel quite right. And I think maybe that played some of the challenges we had. I think Salas ended up going, pushing quite far forward, maybe try to help support in that central channel, that sort of central channel, but it just didn't seem to quite click for whatever reason.
We've been kind of waxing lyrical about Alex Rupert's performances this season. This was one of his quieter games, and I wonder whether it's kind of the connection or whether maybe it's just Isaias's shithousery that put him off. Or because
I think it might have been allowing Salas a bit of more freedom, because he, as you were talking about before, still learning his role within the team, and he's literally trying to deliver on everything. He's just read the game as it needed to be read and stayed in a more defensive role, in a more conservative position, rather than engaging fully within the attacks that he has been doing throughout the season. So playing more of a six than an eight, basically. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a quiet game by Rufer. I would possibly say it's showing a bit of maturity from him to read the game situation and adapt to it as required.
Oh, that, thanks for the segue. Speaking of maturity, Ben Old. This is a kid that has looked, the last 4 weeks or so, has looked absolutely electric. The goal he scored with that pass from Tim Payne, the run he made, oh, beautiful angled run. sprung the offside trap, although I genuinely thought that he was off, but the line says otherwise.
I still think he was offside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty, like, if we were on the other side of that call, I don't know, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
But anyway, long live VAR.
It's nice to get one for a change, right?
It was a very desperate effort by a defender who realised he was in the wrong place and was never going to defend old streaking through. And so he was trying very hard to get away with it. Nice finish. Delianov got hand to it, but it was kind of one of those savable height ones. But
it was a one-on-one, though. So if he'd done it, you'd be going, yeah, if he'd done it, you'd go, if he got it, you'd say, well, that's a good save. But as a one-on-one, you know, he's done okay. I can't really put blame on him. He's not the reason why his defence failed.
No, certainly not. But good to see Benoit getting in the goal, getting a nice goal where he hasn't had to make all the work himself. Game kind of picked up from here. Well, certainly not so much picked up as there were a lot of opportunities that started coming. We saw, obviously, you mentioned before that, Dale, that Adelaide started getting a few opportunities. I mean, how much was that them playing good football, and how much was us not quite vibing in that middle third?
50-50? I don't know. Pick a number. Yeah. I mean, that's the last sort of 5 minutes before halftime. There was 4 very good chances. Three to them, and obviously the cry of one.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's missed that, eh? Genuinely.
Not great, eh?
I think the problem is he's powered through there, and the ball is just
right under his feet.
10 centimetres under his feet, and he's tried to dig it out, and by digging out, he hasn't quite got the angle right. So
I think part of the issue was as well, because ball nutmegs the defender, he doesn't see it until late, and he's at full pace, and it's like, oh, crap. Yeah, poor guy. He almost got stuck in the net at the end. Did you see that?
He did.
Studs caught it upside down.
I put a photo up of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, how much would that have been the ultimate insult to miss that and to then just get stuck upside down in the net, just like a fish caught?
I think if we scored that, you know, into halftime, that would have broken them, I think, when you've lost or not won in so many games. Going 2-0 down, I think you're probably pretty hard to come back from that stage.
Go if we had scored that, great. But the key here is that we didn't concede, because just before half time, Alex Paulson's made a couple of outstanding saves. One was the one-handed push over the crossbar, and the other was the point blank. I don't know how he's parried to catch this header, but those were outstanding piece of goalkeeping. If we do actually end up getting anything out of this season, I'd be surprised if Alex Paulson doesn't end up being the player of the year, because he's just, he has earned us many points from his efforts and goal this season. And I think that was the perfect example of it.
As a full-blown member of the goalkeeper union, I will just say both of those shots kind of straight at him. I mean, the first one is above his head, so all you need to do is get the smallest touch.
It's a bullet. It's going to go over. It was a bullet.
I would say, yeah, bullet. Yeah, absolutely. If that striker puts it 30 centimetres, half a metre either side, it's probably in. The header, another bullet, but likewise straight at him. You'd be disappointed if he didn't save that, I think. And again, 30, you know, half a metre either side, and it probably goes in. And it kind of makes me wonder what the game could have been like if, you know, if either of those had gone in.
Okay, don't wonder, Dale. We don't want to even put that out in the air.
It's just talk up how awesome Alex was and move on with the game.
Yeah. I mean, you can only save what's in front of you. And he did that very competently. Poor old Spoons was getting a bit aroused by that, based on his commentary, the one where he's tipped it over the bar. He was very excited. But as you say, Dale, they were savable, and he did save them well.
That's only because he's so short, he wouldn't have been able to reach up that high.
Ooh. Spoons.
Ooh. Mate, it was his buddy. Birthday on game day. You can't call
glass
that
houses.
His birthday.
Glass houses, Wolves. Glass houses.
Yeah, it is. It's a great point, actually. Yeah, it's when one hobbit calls another hobbit a hobbit. Is it really insulting?
How tall are you, Dale?
Oh, 6 foot at least.
Dale is what, about 5'7", 5'8", something like that.
Oh, please.
He's not that tall.
I don't look up to him. How's that? And I'm not tall.
Literally or figuratively?
Either.
We should get on to the equaliser. We've seen a couple of these of late. A striker just being just devious and just digging in the ball from getting a foot in front. Rufus gone and kicked Van der Sarg. I mean, I've been tempted, to be quite frank, and I'm miles away from the bloke. I don't think there was any argument from any of the Knicks players. He caught him right in the back of the calf. It's like, yeah, shit, what are you going to do? A very good pen by an absolute bell end. Paulson picked the right way and got bloody close to it. He's getting a bit uncanny with his ability to read what's, you know, where they're going to put it. But Jesus, that was unsavable. I should add, by a complete bell end.
The awarding of the penalty, like, it's one of those quite frustrating ones, because I think that the striker, absolutely penalty, the striker has no intention of controlling or shooting or doing anything apart from running in there full tilt to hope that someone collects you. It's like one of those real, real frustrating ones that they come in from the blind side and they're not doing it to, you know, try and get a shot on. It's just trying to get a first touch on.
The Jermaine one from the MacArthur game, same thing. He's just trying to get kicked.
Yeah. But yeah, like you say, absolutely perfect penalty. They're kind of, the in off the post kind of makes me wonder, now that Paulson's got such a good record, whether it forces people to go a slightly bit wider, and whether we might, if we get another one, we might see, you know, balls going slightly outside of the post or off the post, you know, against the post, because they know. I mean, he's conceded two, but for all five, he's gone the right way.
He's gone the right way, and he's making good distance. When you look at some of the other penalty penalty save attempts by some of the other keepers, is it Scott for?
Yeah, Jets.
Yeah. He barely got off his feet for the last one I saw him go. He just had no idea what was going on. Kudos to Paulson for his research and ability to read player.
I want to ask kind of something here. Just before this goal, well, the penalty, we're about to bring on Isaac Hughes, right, to play a back five, because I think obviously Chief has realised we're in a bit of trouble.
We're playing a bit loose.
How does this game go if he brings Hughes on just before this goal?
Does the goal still be scored?
I think Hughes has been really good.
I just mean in terms of bringing him on and playing five, how flexible are you to go from five to what? Five at the back to what we would have ended up. Once you go five at the back, it's much harder.
Five at the back with no forward.
Yeah, how do we bring on Costa and Van Haddam and still play five at the back? You'd have to pull off a defender. Like, would you pull Hughes back off? Like, to if we could then concede it to kind of counter. Like, it's kind of one of those moments where maybe the goal came at actually not too bad a time before we were about to make that sub.
Yeah, I mean, you never know, right? I mean, I'll stand up for Hughes and say that he's been really good. I've liked his composure on the ball, his composure in his organisation. I'm not sure how much of that is Wooten and Sermon talking him through, but certainly when he gets the ball, he's by himself, and he's never looked like he's the sort of guy that's just got panic in his eyes. So does it change it? Yeah, maybe, but I think a back five with no forward, no outlet. I've got to say that, I mean, Cam, I think you called it managing minutes at the beginning. I'm sure you're right, but I'm also like, I'm not sure what Chiefy thought was going to happen with that team rolling out.
I'd just like to point out, I also like the fact that Isaac Hughes, when asked what he likes about playing football, his answer was, "I like hurting people," and that was to a 7-year-old boy. So, yep.
That is.
Yep. Apparently, he used to play league back in the UK. Yeah.
As a card-carrying member of the Defenders Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm almost brought to tears.
Honestly, though, I generally think that team that ran, that were put out, was good enough with the tactics that they would have been told to employ, was good enough to win that game comfortably. Obviously, it didn't pan out that way, and Chiefy bringing on Hughes, or looking to bring on Hughes, recognising that things weren't necessarily going the way, because that first 15 to 20 minutes of that second half, we were very much under the pump. There was very little ball for us, very little outlet, very little of any kind of transitional play beyond just keep it out of our box. And it wasn't until just before the subs came on that we actually started to come back in and like cry and hit the post. And I think there was another opportunity within that space as well. And we had a free kick, which went across Cryev's head and Wooten's foot. So, you know, there was just a start of something that was beginning just before those subs came on. But up to that point, honestly, yeah, we were looking a little ragged.
Second best.
Yeah, that's the great answer.
It is. It's somewhat amusing that we weren't looking that great in that sort of middle 30 to 40 minutes or whatever, but we still created 4 very good chances.
Yeah.
We had the goal, Cryev missed that one, and then Cryev hits the post, I think.
After that, amazing.
Before the, maybe 3 good chances. Maybe I'm misremembering.
No, because there was
a free kick one as well. Yeah, Payne here. There was several chances, but that's the point, right? The chances that we have been creating all season have tended to be very high percentage. We talked about that fairly early on in the season. So we know that if we are going to create a opportunity, it's probably going to be a decent one. You're right. There was certainly an opportunity to score some of those goals, and I wish we'd taken one, take a bit of that pressure off, but. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. As we said, that the one that really hurts was the Cryev tap-in. That changes the game, makes the penalty basically not quite irrelevant, but certainly takes the sting out of it. But credit to Chiefy to recognise the game was there to be taken and making very aggressive substitutions, bringing on Costa, Van Haddam, Conchi and Sutton. I would call 3 of those subs attacking. Obviously, Finn Conchi sitting in the middle, but taking off Salas, Cryev, Kelly Heald, and Al Tay. And it pretty much paid off straight away. Turnover, bobbling ball. I think it's Conchi picks it up, slots it to Van Haddam, who just whacks it straight out to cross to Costa, running out wide, makes the run into the middle. Yeah, that's I think Olds one was going in before the deflection. I didn't really see it from the angle. OVH wasn't taking any chances. Should we call it that nicely? Not taking any chances as opposed to pinching it?
If he hadn't done what he would have, Ball would have done exactly the same thing. I don't hold it against either OVH or Ball for tapping that in, especially OVH when it's his first goal. Like, I get that.
This goal scoring drought continues for Ball, though.
That's it, yeah. But yeah. You don't expect Old to therefore then go on and score a blinder and have what would have been a hat trick if OVH hadn't taken that, right? Like, he's at the point in time he's on 1. You don't expect him to end up, no one expects to end up on a hat trick unless you're Messi or Haaland, right? So yeah, it's I can't blame Oscar for doing it, and I'm glad he's off the mark.
Yeah, very much so. I'm gonna disagree with you on Ball, because I have seen him do this in the past where he has gone, no, that's going in, I will just let it roll in. There was a quite cool moment between Old and OVH. After that, they both ran off to the corner. Bit of a discussion and a kind of, Oldie just waved him off and said, nah, it's fine, you know, whatever. which is pretty cool. I thought that was awesome. I even gave him a peck on the back of his head as they were running back to halfway.
This is why we need goal line technology, so we can actually measure how far out it was, because it can't be more than 30 centimetres, surely.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't over the line, though, so it's definitely OVH's goal, but it was going in. It was definitely going, but there's also going to be a shout whether that deflection counts as a known goal too, right?
No, I think the first shot was on target. So.
Either way, goal is a goal. You know, imagine they don't bury it and something weird happens with a bounce or something. You'd be like, well, why has he not buried it?
We did see another goal here, Ben Old, the one you mentioned, Cam. It's come out from a corner, nothing on, no real angle, body's in the way, and he has just clubbed the bejesus out of it through traffic. Dale, I want to throw to you because I have been questioning Delianov's competence in the past, and I'm not sure if this was a little bit him or just just clubbed it.
I think there's either two or three Adelaide players kind of in the road. So I think he's just reacted late because he hasn't seen it. So he's clubbed it hard enough to go past Delianov before he's seen it. I mean, I have a confession to make about this goal. This was because it was down the far end. I saw the shot go in, I saw the net ripple, and I was like, oh, this is one of these ones where it's a side net in, and all the crowd go up celebrating, and I'm like sitting here going, oh, you idiots, what are you celebrating that for? Old just turns around, just kind of stands there, so I'm like, oh, okay. And it's not until Alex Paulson down in front of us starts running and celebrating, and then I'm like, oh, wait, fuck, that's gone in, and then I think Delianov kicks the goalpost, and I'm like, okay, that's a goal.
Even on TV, it was like that, though.
I was sitting by the post that it went in at, and I didn't think it had gone in until I looked back at Old, and he's just going like, you know, shoulder hands up in the air going, yep, that's easy. It's like,
gosh, no, how's he done that?
I did not think that. And he had no right to score that. There's no reason why he should, nah, there was no reason why he should score that goal. He had no right to get through there.
The angle
not with that many
not.
Players to not get a deflection, and then the keeper's not that far off positioning in front of the shot for that to get through. No right at all. It was just beautifully, so crisply and cleanly hit. It was beautiful.
Yeah, was very well done.
We finally score from a corner too.
Yeah,
is that a corner?
It's been a while.
Yep, it's gone.
Yeah, it's cleared.
Yeah, it was second phrase from the corner. Like Wilton's the one that's got the ball from the corner and passed it straight back to Old, who's finished it. You could argue that was a practiced move because it was that, like, go to the far post, it was back to the player, have a shot. That is something that
it was recycled.
So. I will tell you, Opta have classified as a goal from a corner.
Nice. Yeah, I'd go with that.
I reckon as long as you keep possession. No matter where the ball goes, if you keep position, it's a goal from a corner.
20 minutes later.
Well, if you want to, yeah.
There was a consolation goal for Ibasuki. Bit of a loose ball in the six-yard box, and he's done pretty well to just clobber it into the roof. I was curious that he wasn't starting because he has caused problems for us before. Then I saw him jogging. His knees are shot, and he is a very, very angry man. Their left wing took a shot, justified. It came back out to him, and he kind of tried to take another bobbling shot and skied it. Ibasuki was cursing him out, just screaming at him all the way back to halfway. It was a very slow run back, too. His knees are poked.
Yeah, I think he didn't play last week, so he must be coming back from injury. I thought, like, seeing the 11, I was like, oh, yeah, Clough's out, that's pretty good. No Halloran, that's good. And then I saw, Urukunda and Ibasuki, who absolutely tore us a new one in the first game on the bench. I was like, if we're windle up with, like, 30 minutes to go and these guys are coming on, I was a little bit nervous. But both of those players had absolute stinker. Yeah, you compare the impact we got versus the impact they got off the bench, you know. Ibasuki barely, you know, well, apart from obviously like bundling over because the ball deflected to him. But for then, like, I was watching him for quite a bit and he was trying to hang around Isaac Hughes a lot, regardless of where the ball was. And then Isaac Hughes just absolutely dealt with him eerily in every way. And, you know, Urukunda basically did two things. He smashed over, was it Sutton, I think? After that free kick, and then and someone else in midfield, and then full time just went straight up the shed.
Yeah, there's an attitude issue there, right? That's some pretty crap behaviour. Considering the number of Adelaide fans who made that trip over, there was a decent number in that corner.
Yes.
You go and you thank them. You don't just go charging off the field at that full time. That's not okay.
A whole lot of it wasn't well managed by him, I thought. And it's going to, that's going to really hurt him in his career, like beyond the A-League, that not being coachable, not being a professional. Everyone's good at football.
He wants to be at Bayern. I get that 100%. But if you take that attitude with you to Bayern Munich, you are not surviving at all. You're gone. You'll be out the door. I get that he wants to be there now and not at Adelaide. And he's obviously, because he's a kid, he obviously sees himself as bigger than than the league. That's my interpretation. I shouldn't, say that's definitely what's happening. I don't know. My interpretation is that. So that attitude is awful, and he will not survive overseas with that attitude at all.
Yeah, I would say that anywhere in the major European nations won't tolerate that shit at the best of times. Bayern, I will tell you what will happen to him. He will get dropped to the bench of the under-19s. He will be playing Bundesliga 3, and that will be the end of his career. They will sit his contract out, send him back home. They don't give a shit about the money that they've spent on him. They kind of eat more expensive breakfast over there. Can we just talk about that shoulder drop by Aaron Kunda on Sutton? Whistle's gone. He just runs up and just shoulder charges. So I was questioning how that was not violent conduct, because it wasn't football.
I mean, I think you're stretching the definition there.
What do you call it then?
Yeah, just, Yeah.
Stupidness.
I mean, you got to be striking someone for violent contact, don't you? Like, it's kind of like an elbow or a fist or a slap or something. Like, he's just kind of barged into him. I mean,
he took a run up and dropped the shoulder.
What surprised me about this was he wasn't even time wasting lots. It wasn't keeping the ball away from him. He kind of just stood over the top of it, and he just snapped like that after, a split second. It wasn't, 3 or 4 seconds of Sutton trying to keep the ball away as a time-wasting thing.
Well, it wasn't even that. Sutton was over the ball. Aaron Kunda was maybe 5-6 yards away. Aaron Kunda just took one look at him and just ran up and jumped and shoulder-dropped him. I find that behaviour really, really questionable at best. I mean, it's not football. The whistle's gone. Everyone stopped. I would have loved a referee to turn around and go, buddy, no, take a walk. That's enough.
Well, he's going to learn though, right? He just is going to learn when he goes somewhere where everyone's as good at football as he is. And they're choosing your attitude and your professionalism and your intellect and your game intelligence. Like, he's going to learn.
I suspect that if he tries that kind of shit in some of the European leagues, it will also get him two-footed. Like, someone will go, okay, ref didn't send you off, but I'll make sure you're carried off.
Yeah. But I'll deal with you.
It's remarkably, could you call it naive? I think that's about the nicest thing you could call it, right? Anyway, sorry, Dale.
I was just saying, just before we kind of hopefully finish.
Someone wants to go to bed soon.
just to flick it back to us, I thought, criticised him a little bit in the last sort of month or so, but I thought Conchi did really well when he came on, won the ball for the second goal and played a couple of other quite decent-looking passes in behind. I think Tim Payne didn't quite lead to anything, but he started to show what... I think I said last week, I'm not sure what his thing is. Maybe we're starting to see a little bit of that. Maybe the games need to be stretched a bit forward to see it. But I thought he was excellent, gave us a bit more solidity in there. And Sutton did well coming back on after a long layoff. I thought Kelly Heald was absolutely terrible in this game. He barely made a pass all game, but didn't make a header. It's probably his worst game, I think, of the season. I don't know what for, but I was surprised he lasted as long as he did.
It was a bit of an aberration, right? You're gonna go, I'm gonna put that behind me and move on of him, because he had a shocker. Everyone has a shocker every now and again, and it's taken him what 20 games into the season to have one. I think I'll forgive him a bad game, but hopefully he moves on from it.
It was interesting that the two young defenders who have been so consistent, Sermon and LKH, both had bad games against a team that wasn't up to much. It wasn't like they folded under pressure from, you know, playing the Mariners or playing a big team in front of a very hostile crowd. That they handled. Getting against Adelaide at home, that's when they had their blip. So I'm hoping it's very much, as you say, an aberration. Not looking too bad. So next game up versus Melbourne City at the Amy, I think, where we haven't beaten them since 2013, but they are looking beatable.
Very much so.
It's Melbourne. It's a Melbourne team in Melbourne, and we don't win in Melbourne. We just don't. I'm sure this is a
time to start.
A great time to start. Very good time to start. But I am in a City. We never do well against City. Actually, we never do well against anyone in Melbourne. So, yeah, I hope we get a draw.
We do okay against Western.
But we don't play them in Melbourne. We play them in Ballarat and Geelong.
Right. Okay. Specifically, Melbourne CBD. Right. To me, this is kind of where the rubber hits the road, right? There's, what, 7 games left? If we can't actually put on the favourites jacket and just go, yep, we deserve to be here, you know, you need to start doing that at some stage. Otherwise, yeah. you're not going to make it through the finals, right?
Looking at the table, we're on 40 points and CCM is on 37, and then it's a decent drop, so 8 points back to third place, and MacArthur and Victoria are down there on 31, 32, 30. So it's quite tight for the next 4 positions in the 6. On average, you need somewhere between 49 and 52 points to win the league, and you need about 37 to guarantee yourself a spot on the 6. We need CCM to have a bit of a blip still, and the game, I think we're still to play them once more. If I just check our schedule. But we should definitely be well in with a shout. Actually, we're not playing. Oh, yes, we are playing Mariners away on the 6th of April. So we should definitely be considered us. And I genuinely think it's between us and CCM for the league. And I just hope that we're able to pull that off.
Yeah. Another thing to throw in the mix is Central Coast is still in the AAC Cup. So I think they've got a home game against Roy Christian's Odisha on Thursday. Then they play MacArthur on Sunday, and then they've got the away leg the following Thursday, and that's international window, so that doesn't help that much. But you'd think they'd be favourites for that, and then they've got, if they'd win that, then there's 2 more games, home and away, in I think early-ish April, might be just after we play them. So it's just like another bunch of games that they need to contend with, some travel that also may go into the mix.
And we know how much travel affects you.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I totally agree. We need to be targeting 3 points from the games like the one we're going to play on this weekend. And we're certainly still well and truly in with a shout at that title. And finishing first, you know, guaranteed a home playoff, guaranteed a grand final if we make it. Home and away league in Australia, you can time your trip to over there a bit easier. It would be quite a good thing. But we're certainly in with a shout. It's Melbourne and Melbourne, right? It's we never do well in Melbourne.
It's time to shake that off, Cameron.
I agree with shake you. I agree with you. But it feels very odd for you to be saying something positive to me about a football game involving the Phoenix.
It's this year.
We've got some history here, buddy. We've been going to football together for...
I've been there as long as
16 years. Yeah.
We're due. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. Cam says we're due. Positive news on the injury front is that Nico Pennington is possibly back. I'm assuming that Zawada is a week-by-week prospect still. And by the look of the guys that came on, OVH and Costa, that they're fine. certainly didn't mind a bit of a run around. So those games are on Saturday. Women are playing Perth at literally midnight. The men are playing Melbourne at Amy at 7:30. I'll confirm that it's Amy because, you know, that makes a difference. Yeah. So, and I believe that has brought us to the end. Thanks for listening. Thanks for not jumping in, guys. You can say goodbye now.
It's been real.
Goodbye now.
See ya.